Vassar and New York Stage and Film's 33rd Powerhouse season is underway, and their second main stage production, Good Men Wanted, by Kevin Armento, opens July 20th and runs through July 30th in Poughkeepsie. Good Men Wanted brings to life the true stories of renegade women who disguise themselves as men to fight in the Civil War. It is a drama punctuated by explosive dance sequences set to contemporary pop music. Five women of vastly different backgrounds become warriors and spies, endure prison camps and midnight raids, and ultimately intersect at America's most storied battlefield, Gettysburg. The production stars Asia Kate Dillon, best known for playing Brandi Epps in Orange is the New Black, and Taylor Mason in Billions, and it's a pleasure to welcome Asia to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
What brought you to this particular production and to tell this amazing story?
I received an invitation to be part of one of the original workshop productions of this play a couple of years ago, and I played Albert Cashier at that time, which is the character that I'm also playing in this version of the show.
Tell us about Albert Cashier and the connection that you had in the sense of what you wanted to explore in looking at this particular figure in history.
Albert Cashier is a real person, and each character in this play has a story that is an amalgamation of many stories. The author has said, you know, it's hundreds of stories distilled down into these five unique ones that the audience gets to see. And because Albert was a real person in history, we know a little bit more about him. We know that Albert dressed as a man long before the war, and that Albert continued to dress as a man after the war, which I think is a particularly unique story because there were several people who dressed as men before the war and continued to do so after the war, and or who disguised themselves as men for the war, but then continued to live that way afterwards simply for power or economic gain. And so I think that's a really interesting aspect of history that certainly I knew very little about before becoming involved with this play. And so I'm excited to share it with other people.
Born Jenny Irene Hodgers, Irish-born, and then served in the Union Army. Do we know the impetus for Jenny to become Albert?
Based on the history that I've encountered regarding Jenny or Albert, I don't know the exact impetus. So that's part of what's been interesting to explore about playing Albert. It's been a really exciting journey to, as I said, uncover the pieces that are really true to Albert's life and then to play around with the pieces that have been interjected, as I said, that are an amalgamation of other people's stories. But I will say, because you mentioned that, you know, Albert has an Irish immigrant background, that there were so many immigrants that fought in the Civil War, which, again, I think is a part of history that certainly was lost on me in my early schooling. And so I think it's an important part of history to now bring to the forefront.
I'm interested in, as you mentioned, Albert's story then comes into the story of these other women. So talk a little bit about that tapestry of how it fits into all of the other stories being told.
We have these five people who are disguising themselves as men to fight in the Civil War. And what I love about the play is that it takes these five very different stories, and what we see are the ways in which they do connect and then the ways in which they are very far from each other. They each have a very specific and individual reason for enlisting in the war, and I think that those differences are important to tell because it isn't that, you know, everyone joined the war so they could get a paycheck, or everyone joined the war because they were bloodthirsty. You know, everyone had their own unique reason, and it puts a real human face on something that could be very easily generalized.
Why do you think stories like this are so often lost in history?
History has a tradition of whitewashing over historically marginalized and historically disenfranchised people, whether we're talking about Native Americans or people of color or people who identify as women. You know, traditionally history has this very male-dominated, white-dominated angle to it. And so I think that's another reason that this play is so important, particularly right now, to say, you know, there have always been immigrants, people of color, and women who have been standing up for what they believe in and fighting just as hard as, you know, the white men that we sort of traditionally hold up as heroes.
Let's talk a little bit about, certainly not to the degree, but to the history that you yourself have made as having the first major non-binary role on American series television. What is that like for in bringing that your story to a character story, and in an exploration, in basically educating us, educating those people who are watching television or watching this play?
Well, you know, because I identify as having a non-binary gender identity, meaning I experience my gender identity falling outside the traditional boxes of man or woman, you know, any room that I'm in, particularly when we're talking about me playing a character, those conversations are going to come up because either the character I'm playing has the same gender identity as me, or they have a different gender identity than me. And so simply by me being in the room, similar to the character I play on Billions, Taylor Mason, when Taylor is in the room, inherently the conversation is going to come up simply because Taylor is there, and that is a parallel to my life as well.
You make the point that this character was always a non-binary character, even before it was auditioned or any other actor got the part.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel you brought to the role?
You know, as you said, Taylor Mason was always written as a non-binary gender-identifying character, but that was always, you know, just one of the aspects that made up the full character of Taylor, and it was ultimately the full package that attracted me to the role. And I think ultimately the producers, the casting director, the showrunners, creators wanted to find the best actor for the part, and while it is a coincidence ultimately that I am non-binary gender identifying and so is Taylor Mason, it is certainly significant.
When you think of that significance, this has come up as far as the Emmy voting as to where they put you. It's created a quandary, but for everyone other than you, and I'm curious as to how you navigated that and did it relatively, I think, with just obviously great grace, but also with an instructive sense of, okay, this is what probably should happen.
Well, thank you very much, first of all. And second of all, it came about because, you know, Showtime came to me and said very graciously that they wanted to submit me for a nomination and that, you know, they have these two categories, actor and actress, and they didn't know how I'd like to be submitted. So the conversation began there. And then as I began to think about the question myself, I thought, you know, I don't exactly have enough information to actually answer the question of how I'd like to be submitted. So I wrote this letter to the Academy asking them what the words actor and actress mean to them. Are they in reference to assigned sex? Are they gender identity associated words? You know, what did they think and how did they see it? And they got back to me and said that the rules have always stated that a performer can enter either category for whatever reason. And so based on that answer, I moved forward with supporting actor, because actor is a non-gendered, non-sexed word from the late 1500s. And although the term actress came into being originally to refer to people who'd been assigned female at birth, it is also now used by some people who identify as women synonymously. So for me, the word actor really fits because, as I said, it is a non-gendered, non-sexed word. And that's where we're at now. You know, given those two choices, I was able to make one that felt right to me. And in terms of the possibilities of where we can go or what types of categories we should and can have, I'm excited and confident because those conversations are actually happening now, and I get to be a part of them, which is really cool.
And it brings us back to the play that you're doing, that you don't have to be an Albert or a Jenny, right? That there can, that it doesn't have to be, the identity doesn't have to be in the name. It's how you identify yourself.
Sure. I think what you're saying is, you know, names inherently aren't gendered, and that everyone has the autonomy to decide how they identify based on how they experience themselves. And, you know, I think that labels can be important when we give them to ourselves, but it's when other people label us that those labels can potentially become damaging and hurtful.
How do you have control over how you are labeled?
Well, I would say that I'm able to have control over how I'm labeled when I meet someone for the first time, and there's that moment where I get to say, what are your pronouns? These are mine. And then more often than not, someone says, what do you mean pronouns? And then we get to have an entire conversation about gender identity, pronouns, and all of that stuff, which to me inherently feels like it's making the world around me a little bit safer and hopefully ultimately the world at large.
When you look at acting roles, they have been non-binary roles. Would you look and say or not dismiss a role that was not that?
Well, so the character that I play on Orange is the New Black, Brandy Epps, identifies as a woman.
Right.
And the character that I play on Billions identifies as non-binary. So when it comes to the gender identity of a character, I work with a team. You know, my agents and my manager know that I want to be auditioning for roles across the gender spectrum, just like I want to be auditioning for roles across the sexual orientation spectrum. If it came to a role where they wanted an actor who had been assigned male at birth, not someone who identified as a boy or a man, but had been assigned male at birth, then that would be a role that I would step back from, because clearly that piece of information would be key to the character itself, and I was assigned female at birth, so I would hope that they would give that role to someone assigned male at birth, just like I hope when there is a trans or non-binary or gender non-conforming role that casting directors and producers at least seek out those performers first if they don't already have them in, you know, their writing rooms or on their production staff.
Do you like the opportunity to talk about what we are talking about, or would you prefer that we live in a world where we focus solely on your role as an actor?
Thank you for that question. I think that because these are conversations I'm having in my daily life already, whether it's about gender identity as a spectrum or sexual orientation as a spectrum or the social justice work that I do when it comes to Black Lives Matter or Standing Rock, you know, these are the conversations, as I said, that I'm having in my life already. So every opportunity that I get to have them with a stranger, like I'm having right now, as I said earlier, it helps me feel like I'm making the world directly around me a little bit safer, and hopefully the world at large, because I think that the more people who begin to become aware of the fact that we're all assigned a sex at birth, and we all have a gender identity, and sometimes those things conform, and sometimes they don't, is actually a very freeing realization for anyone, because it allows us to all have autonomy over who we are, and I think that's really powerful.
You were in the early days of working on this production. What is this journey mean to you in the sense of bringing this to life and ultimately bringing it to audiences here and perhaps beyond?
I'm really honored to have been a part of this play, sort of weaving in and out of it from its beginning stages, because I've gotten to see the play itself grow and shift, and the character of Albert grow and shift. And it's a unique opportunity as an actor to go back and get to play a part that you've already played again, but in a new context, in a new theater, with new actors surrounding me, and ultimately with new audience members every night, which keeps the experience fresh and exciting and also challenging. And as we spoke about earlier, I think it's a particularly important time to bring stories of historically marginalized and historically disenfranchised people to the forefront, considering the political climate we're currently living in, but frankly, the one we've always been living in.
Good Men Wanted by Kevin Armento opens July 20th and runs through July 30th in Poughkeepsie. Powerhouse.vassar.edu. Vassar and New York Stage and Film's 33rd Powerhouse season is underway, and their second main stage production is Good Men Wanted. Asia Kate Dillon, I thank you very much for being with us. What a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a really good time.
Again, Good Men Wanted, running July 20th through July 30th in Poughkeepsie, powerhouse.vassar.edu. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.